Chapter 20. Give the Devil His Duet. I land with a crunch, and at first I think I must have broken at least three bones. Then I realize it's snow crunching beneath me, not broken limbs, but I don't breathe any easier. Jai and Darby land on either side. They must have gotten caught in the portal too. The weights didn't seem to have followed us. The portal must have somehow sucked me up despite them holding me down. With a groan, I push myself to my knees and look around. This place is cold. We're not in the desert where I landed last time, but on a wide, flat plain of hard-packed snow. In the distance, jagged peaks rise from the frozen earth, and above us, the dark sky is mostly blocked by a huge mountain of ice. Darby jumps up first. She stares, wide-eyed, and takes several short, panicked breaths. Where? How? The Midnight Orchestra, I sigh, heaving myself to my feet. Everything Jai said is true, except for the werewolf part. So far, Jai mutters. He brushes off some snow.
Well, that was a spectacular failure.
Thanks for trying, I say earnestly. He gives me a weak smile. Well, I say, I guess we might as well see this through. Who knows? Maybe Mr. Midnight will ask for a tie-dye bandana or an origami swan. I've got plenty of those. Mr. Who? Darby asks.
Welcome back to the Midnight Orchestra, Miss Jones, says a smooth voice,
and we turn to see Mr. Stewart bowing to us. Tonight he's wearing a puffy red coat, ski pants, and a red mask with his bagpipes in hand.
It is an honor to have you return. And I see you've brought guests. What a lovely surprise.
Darby stares.
Tell me that's not Santa Claus.
I sigh. That's not Santa Claus. Though between the beard and the red outfit, he does fit the bill.
And where are we?
Well, if it's midnight Mistwick time, Jai says, that makes this Canada, I'm guessing.
Quite astute, says Mr. Stewart. If you would follow me, please.
Come on, Darby, I say. I'll fill you in while we walk. I tell her everything as we follow Mr. Stewart down a trail made of tamped down snow, the hard crust supporting our weight. Along either side of the path, lamps made of ice hold glowing balls of blue light. Whether that's magic or just stage tricks, I don't know, but it creates an eerie mood.
So to recap, Darby says, you made a deal with this midnight guy, no questions asked, and
I didn't make a deal. It just sort of happened. And I planned to return the memory seed.
Except you didn't.
I wince. I didn't.
So now you owe this guy some kind of favor.
Yep.
Any idea what he'll ask for?
Nope.
Or what he'll do if you don't give him what he wants?
Not a clue. Darby shivers. I'm not sure I've ever seen her truly scared, not even when a horde of ghosts was attacking our school.
I always thought the Midnight Orchestra was a myth.
A common misconception, says Mr. Stewart, making us all jump.
I didn't think he could hear our whispers.
Tell me, honored guests, have you ever been to a glacier?
All three of us shake our heads. He smiles and sweeps an arm.
Then I'm guessing you've never been inside one either.
Darby's eyes grow wide.
What?
Mr. Stewart has led us to a sort of cave, but it's like no cave I've ever seen. This one is a rough opening into the snow itself, a cave made entirely of undulating ice.
Whoa,
I say, putting a gloved hand to the wall. Is it safe?
Perfectly,
Mr. Stewart assures us.
Proceed inside and follow the lamps.
He leaves us then, and Jai eagerly takes the lead. Despite everything, he seems to be falling for the orchestra's showmanship. Darby and I follow with more caution. Even with dread churning in my belly, I can see how beautiful the place is. The walls shine like blue glass, smooth in some parts, jagged in others. Our shadows ripple wildly in the light of the blue lamps, making it seem as if there are monsters creeping inside the translucent walls, following us. The ground is a mixture of slick ice and smooth gray rocks.
We follow twisting tunnels past glittering columns of ice. I shiver, glad I don't suffer from claustrophobia. Some of these tunnels are so narrow we have to walk single file. Just like last time, the lady in the lace mask waits beside her stall. She smiles in greeting and opens the red curtain. "Just go with it," I tell Jai and Darby. I take the same fox mask as last time, while Darby picks out a painted cat face, and Jai selects a half mask covered in glittering diamonds, with tall silver feathers springing out of the side and crystals dangling from the bottom.
"What?"
he says as Darby and I give him looks.
"It spoke to me."
He fixes the mask on his face and smiles, looking like a walking disco ball.
"Enjoy the performance," says the mask lady.
Finally, we come to a large cavern beneath a great dome of ice. Here we find the audience gathering. Instead of a sunken amphitheater, this time the stage is a raised circular platform with rings of plush chairs all around it, draped in furs. Fantastic ice sculptures are frozen in a circle around the stage. Fairy tale animals like unicorns, satyrs, and griffins. They shine in the light of the blue lamps that glow all around the cavern. Above the stage hangs a great chandelier of ice spheres. I shudder to think what would happen if one of these fragile pieces snapped off. Unlike the last time, the orchestra is visible, but encased in a wall of crystal clear ice that surrounds the stage. They sit perfectly still inside, as if frozen themselves.
"Fantastic," Jai murmurs. "Wonder what spell they'll play."
"We're not here for the show," I remind him. He shrugs.
"Well, now that we are here, might as well make the most of it, don't you think?"
"Who are all these people?"
asks Darby. She looks around at the masked guests. "If we knew the answer to that," I say, "I think we'd be in even deeper trouble than we already are." As if to drive home how deep that trouble is, the lady in the lace mask appears at my elbow.
"Miss Jones, I must steal you away for a bit, I'm afraid. Mr. Midnight would like to see you."
Do I have to?" I ask in a small voice.
"We're coming with her," says Jai, sticking out his chest.
"I think not."
She gives him a tight smile.
"Mr. Midnight prefers to conduct his business privately."
"You're not taking Amelia," Darby tenses, her hands raising into one of her self-defense poses. "It's all right," I sigh. "I'll be back soon. Just lie low till then, please." They exchange looks and I add, "Please, I've already dragged you this far into my mess. Just let me finish this so we can go home. Lie low and stay out of trouble."
"You're one to talk,"
Darby points out. But they relent and I follow the lady. She leads me away from the orchestra toward a small doorway in the ice wall. It leads to a steep stairwell cut into the glacier. The steps zigzag back and forth, the ice steps overlaid with rubber mats so they aren't slippery. But there's no safety handrail, and I'm left grasping the cold walls for balance. I ask the masked lady how far we're going, but she doesn't seem to hear me. Finally, after a short climb, we emerge atop a wide, snowy plateau.
"Oh," I breathe.
Dancing across the stars are the northern lights. Green banners with streaks of purple and pink curl silkily overhead. The edges stretch and warp, winding like a river through the dark navy sky. The aurora's colorful shine reflects on the mirrored surface of the glacial ice, making me feel like I'm standing at the bottom of the sea, looking up through glowing, rippling water. Beyond the colors, the stars gleam by the thousands. All the spells I've ever played could not compare to that magic sky. It's as if the stars are playing a symphony all their own, their spell ancient and strange and endless.
"This way, señorita," says the masked lady, making me jump.
I'd got so caught up staring at that sky, I'd almost completely forgotten she was there. She leads me over the hard crust of snow to a small table setting. A plush rug is laid on the snow with a table and two armchairs. A collection of white candles burns on the table, along with little plates of strawberries, chocolates, and madeleines. In the center of the table is a white vase full of roses, dead roses, their petals shriveled and dry, some already littering the tablecloth. I look around. Is there supposed to be someone here?
Mr. Midnight will be along shortly.
Won't he be in the orchestra?
For distinguished patrons like you, he will make time.
Oh, I don't know if I'm as important as all that.
Her smile drops as she gives me a deep, probing look.
Miss Jones, I assure you, when you have Mr. Midnight's attention, you become the most important person in the world.
I sit there nervously. A white fur blanket is draped on the back of the chair, and the lady removes it and offers it to me, her flawless smile back in place.
I'll send Coco, she says, going back down the steps into the heart of the glacier.
Shivering, I wrap the blanket around me and look up at the aurora borealis. The night seems to be getting colder. The food on the table looks delicious, but I'm scared to touch it. It might be enchanted, like the food in a fairy tale. I wonder if the orchestra has begun playing. I can't hear anything, but that's no surprise given the thick layers of ice between me and the music. Are Jai and Darby okay? I hope they're staying quiet and out of the way like I told them to. I wish I'd never told Jai about any of this. I won't be able to breathe properly until they're both safe at Mistwick again. What will Mr. Midnight ask for? Will I be able to afford it? He told me he never demands payment that a person can't afford. But what can he ask of someone who has practically nothing?
Cold, Miss Jones?
I suck in a breath and turn to see Mr. Midnight walking toward me, his steps silent on the snow.
A little, I say. My heart thumps like it's leading a drumline.
Allow me,
he says, lifting his violin to his chin. He plays a solemn tune, the notes as sweet as chocolate in the air. As he plays, he walks slowly around the table, just out of the candlelight, little more than a shadow. In the sky, the northern lights seem to dance in rhythm with his lovely, sad music. Sparks of blue light drift from the violin to burn all around me, making the air shimmer with heat like a cloud of stars. I feel warmer at once, but no less nervous. Mr. Stewart appears with a silver tray of hot cocoa and a small bowl of marshmallows. He sets them down with a smile, nods to Mr. Midnight, and then retreats. I might be able to resist the food, but that steaming hot mug is too much. I wrap my hands around it and sip, not surprised to find it's the most delicious cocoa I've ever tasted, as warm and smooth as Mr. Midnight's music. I almost don't care if it is enchanted.
Thanks, I say. That's much better already. And, thanks for meeting me.
I figure the more polite I am, the better my chances of leaving this place in one piece. He gives a small nod, still playing. Feeling more than a little awkward, I wait for the spell to finish, my hands clenched tightly on my lap. At last, the finale note shivers off the strings. He lowers the violin.
Welcome back, Miss Jones.
Thank you. I know what this is about, sir. I used the memory you gave me. I didn't mean to, not really, but... Still in shadow, he looks at me a moment, and my voice scurries down my throat to hide between my lungs. Then, slowly, he steps into the light and sits in the chair opposite me. His black mask conceals everything but his eyes, which are the same cold blue as the glacier. The mask is sculpted into an expressionless face, with sharp, ridged cheekbones and temples. But there's no nose or mouth, just smooth, shiny porcelain down to a square chin. Unnerved by it, I look down at my cocoa instead. Let me guess, I say. You want payment, don't you?
Great magic comes at a cost,
he acknowledges softly. I don't have any money, I say, or much of anything of value. The most expensive thing I own is my mother's flute, and there's no way I'm giving that up.
On the contrary, Miss Jones, you have something of priceless value. You possess the ability to create new magic, something many musicians would kill for.
The way he says that makes me shiver all over again.
What I desire,
he says, leaning forward, his violin resting on his knee,
is a spell for a spell, an equal exchange.
Spell, I repeat. What sort of spell? He smiles, then takes one of the dead roses out of the vase and sets it on the table before me.
Miss Jones, you will compose for me a spell to raise the dead.